All right, so have you ever thought about what happens when someone's right to practice their religion, like actually goes head to head with the government's duty to protect nature and its promises to Native American tribes?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, so today we're diving into this really interesting case. Harvey Firebird, Gibson v. Bruce Babbitt. It's a case that really highlights these kinds of issues.
You know what's really fascinating about this case? It kind of forces us to look at the different layers of American law, like individual freedom and protecting the environment, and also the government's special relationship with tribal nations. Like they all kind of clash in this one case.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we've got Harvey Gibson at the center of all of this, and he's a Native American who wasn't part of a federally recognized tribe, and he was denied a permit to get eagle feathers for religious ceremonies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and this was under the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. We usually call it BGEPA. And so this denial basically stirs this whole legal battle because Gibson argued that his rights under RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and the First Amendment's Free Exercise Clause, were being totally violated.
So basically, this case is trying to figure out where to draw the line. Like, where do someone's religious rights stop when they might be affecting an endangered species and promises the government made to certain tribes?
Exactly. That's the main thing we're going to explore in this deep dive, right? So how did the court balance Gibson's religious freedom against what the government had to do based on treaties and their interest in protecting eagles, which were once endangered?
Right.
We're also going to look closely at RFRA and the strict scrutiny standard from the First Amendment. And since you guys are all law students, we're going to really focus on how the court reasoned through this and what it means for understanding these complicated legal issues.
Sounds good.
All right, so let's start with the basics. Who are the main players in this whole legal drama?
Well, first you've got Harvey Gibson, right? He's the one who needs the eagle feathers for his religious practice, and he was denied the permit.
Okay.
And on the other side is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They're a part of the Department of the Interior. And at the time, Bruce Babbitt was the Secretary of the Interior. So his department was the one that said no to Gibson's application.
Got it. So what was the big disagreement that landed this case in court? Like, what was the heart of the issue they just couldn't agree on?
Basically, it comes down to Gibson's request for the eagle feather permit being denied. You see, BGEPA generally makes it illegal to have eagle parts.
Right.
But there's this exception for religious use. But here's the catch. The rules about this exception say that only members of federally recognized Native American tribes can get these permits. And since Gibson wasn't a member of one of these tribes, his application was denied.
So Gibson is saying that this difference between being a member of a federally recognized tribe or not is stopping him from practicing his religion fairly.
Exactly.
What legal arguments did he make to fight this denial?
Okay, so he claimed that this denial went against RFRA, which is a law that really protects religious practices.
Right.
And he also said it messed with his First Amendment right to freely practice his religion, which is like a super important constitutional freedom.
Got it. So let's break down the legal framework behind this case, starting with RFRA.
Okay.
This act's really important here. Can you explain how RFRA decides if religious practices are being burdened too much?
Yeah, so RFRA sets a pretty high standard for the government. If a government action makes it much harder for someone to practice their religion, RFRA says the government has to pass a tough two-part test.
Okay.
First, they got to show that the action is really important for the government, like a super important reason. And second, they have to prove that this action is the only way or the least restrictive way to achieve that super important goal. It's not enough to just have a decent reason. It has to be a really, really good reason.
Yeah.
And the way they do it has to be the most specific way possible.
That makes sense. So RFRA really makes the government explain why they're limiting someone's religious practice. Now, how does the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, BGEPA, fit into all of this? Like, what does it say and how does it work with religious freedom?
Well, like we said, BGPA generally says you can't have eagle parts because they're protected.
Right.
But they get that eagles are really important to Native American tribes for their culture and religion.
Yes.
So there's a part of the law that lets the Secretary of the Interior give permission to take, have, and transport eagles for religious reasons by Indian tribes, as long as it doesn't hurt the eagle population.
Okay.
The important thing here is that the rules made under this part of the law limited these permits to members of federally recognized tribes.
I see.
This shows how the government has a special relationship and obligations to those specific tribes because of treaties and stuff.
Right, which brings us to those treaty obligations. They seem to be a big part of how the government is defending its actions.
Yeah.
Can you talk more about how these obligations are part of the government side of the case?
So the U.S. has this unique relationship with federally recognized Native American tribes based on all these treaties and laws over many, many years.
Mm.
These treaties often have parts that protect tribal culture and religious practices, and getting access to important resources like eagles is often seen as part of these protections.
Okay.
So the government's argument is that they have a legal and moral duty to keep the promises made in these treaties, especially to federally recognized tribes. And this obligation is super important when we're talking about sharing something as limited as eagle feathers.
So the government isn't just saying they have a general interest. They're saying they have specific legal duties.
Exactly.
What were those specific compelling interests that the government said were at risk if they gave Gibson a permit?
Okay, so they had three main compelling interests.
Okay.
First, they wanted to keep protecting bald and golden eagles.
Oh.
You know, these birds were in danger of disappearing, and they needed strict rules to make sure they could survive.
Right.
Second, they wanted to protect Native American religions. They figured that if they made sure federally recognized tribes could get eagle parts for their ceremonies, they'd be helping those religious practices continue.
Interesting. So it's like a targeted protection argument.
Exactly. And the third compelling interest, which really convinced the court, was about the U.S. keeping its promises in the treaties with Native American tribes. They really stressed that special government-to-government connection and the importance of honoring those treaties.
Gotcha. So let's get to what the court actually decided, starting with how they used RFRA.
Okay.
The first step with RFRA is figuring out if there was a big burden on Gibson's religious practice. What did the court say about that?
The court was very clear. They agreed that not giving Gibson a permit was a big problem for his religious practice. It was pretty obvious that he needed eagle feathers to properly practice his beliefs.
So that burden was there, which meant the government had to show those compelling interests and prove that they were using the least restrictive way to achieve them.
Right.
Which of those interests did the court think was the most convincing?
The court was most convinced by the treaty obligations. They really respected the government's responsibility to keep its treaty promises to federally recognized tribes.
Okay.
They recognize how serious those agreements are and the government's role in keeping them.
And then there's the question of whether limiting those permits to members of federally recognized tribes was the absolute most specific way to uphold those treaty obligations.
Yeah, this is where the limited number of eagles became a big deal in the court's thinking.
Okay.
The government showed evidence that there were only about 1,000 eagles available each year for permits. The court agreed that giving permits to more people than just those in federally recognized tribes would make those eagles even harder to get, and the government might not be able to keep its promises to the tribes.
Interesting.
They also worried about huge delays, saying that more people wanting permits could make tribes wait maybe even 10 years to get eagle parts that treaties promise them.
Wow, a 10-year wait. That really shows how big of a problem expanding eligibility could be.
Right. The court thought about other options, like a waiting list for people who weren't members of tribes, but they decided that even with a list, there would still be a shortage of eagles, and they had to prioritize the treaty obligations.
So they were being practical about what could actually be done given the limited resources and those existing promises.
Yeah. Basically, the court said there wasn't a better way to both honor the treaties and also let people like Gibson get permits for their religious practices.
So they figured the current system, even though it was hard on Gibson, was the best way to keep those treaty promises when there weren't enough eagle feathers for everyone.
Exactly.
Gibson also said that this permit limit went against his First Amendment right to freely practice his religion. How did the court respond to that?
So they looked at Gibson's claim using the First Amendment's strict scrutiny standard, which, like we talked about with RFRA, needs a super strong reason from the government and a very specific way to get that goal.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the strict scrutiny is thought to be easier on the government than RFRA, but in this case, the court decided the same thing as with RFRA.
Okay.
They said that the government's reason, especially the treaty obligations, was strong enough to justify limiting Gibson's religious practice.
Interesting.
They even said because RFRA is stricter on the government than the First Amendment, if the restriction passed the RFRA test, it would definitely pass the First Amendment test too.
So they got the same result looking at it from both the law, RFRA, and the Constitution, First Amendment.
Yeah.
What does this case mean for people studying law? What are the big ideas that Gibson v. Babbitt makes clear?
There are some really important takeaways for future lawyers first. This case shows that the government's promises to Native American tribes in treaties are a really strong reason that can sometimes be more important than individual religious freedom under RFRA, especially when resources are limited.
Okay.
This highlights how unique and important those treaty relationships are.
Yeah, putting treaty obligations first in this case is a big deal.
Absolutely. Second, the case shows us that courts usually trust the expertise of government agencies, especially when it comes to managing natural resources and fulfilling treaty obligations.
Okay. The court basically accepted what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said about how few eagles there were and what would happen if they gave out more permits.
Makes sense. Looking beyond the legal details, what bigger issues does this case bring up?
This case really shows how complicated it can be to balance protecting the environment, basic rights like religious freedom, and the special sovereignty of Native American tribes. It makes us think hard about how to make these important values work together when they clash, and the tough decisions involved in sharing limited resources while respecting different legal and ethical ideas.
Absolutely. And lastly, what does Gibson v. Babbitt teach us about how courts handle those messy situations where different laws, rights, and obligations overlap?
Gibson v. Babbitt is a great example of how courts figure out how statutory rights, like those in RFRA, work with constitutional rights from the First Amendment and the government's specific duties based on treaties.
It shows us that these different legal areas don't always fit together perfectly, and courts often have to balance things carefully, often giving a lot of weight to the government's unique and historically based obligations to federally recognized tribes.
So for you law students out there, the main lesson from Harvey, Firebird, Gibson v. Bruce Babbitt, is that legal principles are all connected, and courts have to weigh different interests. We've seen how much weight federal treaty obligations with Native American tribes can have, especially when it comes to religious freedom and managing natural resources.
Yeah, this case really drives home that understanding the historical and legal context of treaties is crucial for analyzing legal fights about Native American rights and religious freedom.
Totally. And here's something to think about. Given how much the court emphasized treaty obligations as a reason that can sometimes be more important than individual religious claims, what does this mean for the rights of indigenous people and groups who are not federally recognized? How might this decision affect future legal battles about religious practices and access to important cultural resources for these communities?
That's a really good question. It makes us think about how far the federal government's responsibility to tribes goes and how that connects with the rights and traditions of all indigenous people, whether they're federally recognized or not.
Definitely something to keep thinking about. We encourage you all to read the full Gibson v. Babbitt decision and look into other legal writings on this topic to really understand these complex issues.
It's a fascinating area of law.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
My pleasure.